Disclaimer: the following story is very graphic and deals with very, very brutal violence. Listener's discretion is advised. Hello. It's April 24th, 2024. My name is Simone, and this is 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. I do apologize for being late yet again for a new episode, but here I am again to make it up to you. And like always, I hope you all have had a great week so far and are having a great start to your week. Also, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, today's episode is very graphic. Very, very graphic. And again, listener's discretion is advised. And with that, let's dive in to today's case. The year was 1996, and in the southern college town of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, many people experienced many different aspects of life. Many of the residents enjoyed a slower, more traditional pace of their everyday routine by enjoying family-owned businesses, barbecue joints, and slow-paced live music. But many also participated in what Tuscaloosa is mostly known for, which is their football. According to reports, many residents and tourists in Tuscaloosa love to go to high school and football games, but they mostly cheered on their local Crimson Tide football team at the University of Alabama at Tuscaloosa. Reports state that several thousands of fans cheered everywhere the team went, and they were proud that they called Tuscaloosa home. And to prepare for the games, you could find many residents at pep rallies and tailgate parties on Friday and Saturday, with most of the fans being back to church on Sunday. Speaking of church, many of Tuscaloosa's residents packed the numerous churches here every Sunday, as they are in the quote-unquote Bible Belt. And luckily, possibly due to their faith and or Southern hospitality, many people here were known to be friendly and welcoming, with crime not being a significant factor here. However, in January 1996, despite Tuscaloosa having a pleasant atmosphere back then, when a report came in about a pregnant young woman who resided here and she vanished, it shook the city and state to its core and wondered if she would be found and what the outcome would be. In the following case, you'll find out who the woman was, the investigation, and shocking aftermath in a case I title, Not Hers to Hold. Although today's case takes place in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, let's begin a little over 230 miles away in Norcross, Georgia, in February 1996. Reports state that here, a 28-year-old woman named Felicia Scott, who lived in Tuscaloosa, arrived at her father's home in Georgia to tell him some exciting news. She had just given birth to a baby. Her father and some other family members were very surprised, but welcomed the news and the new addition with open arms. However, what Felicia and the family weren't expecting was that shortly after arriving, local police and police from Tuscaloosa knocked on the door and they questioned Felicia about the baby. According to reports, Felicia seemed confused as to what they were talking about. But police told her there was word back in Alabama that the baby girl she was holding may have been a baby that was reported missing and may have belonged to someone else. Felicia told police they were wrong and that the baby was hers. And as a matter of fact, she had recently given birth to the baby girl on the side of a road. When the police asked her why there was no record of any hospital nearby or in Alabama having records of the baby or the birth, she said it was because the birth happened on the side of the road and that she had not gone to the hospital yet. However, when police mentioned that hospital officials in Birmingham, Alabama, alerted police that a woman who looked like Felicia matched a patient who came in with a baby with the umbilical cord removed, Felicia backtracked and said yes, she had visited that hospital, but since the baby was born outside the hospital, she just didn't have a birth certificate yet. After more questioning and grilling from detectives, though, Felicia came clean to detectives and said that the baby girl was indeed not hers, but her friend's 17-year-old Carithia Curry's baby, and that Carithia was dead. However, what she failed to mention at the time was how Carithia died and how she got Carithia's baby girl. According to reports, Carithia Curry was born Carithia Coucher Curry to Carolyn and Curtis O'Neill on August 13, 1978, in Tuscaloosa, and she had two sisters, Margaret, who was a year older, and Nicole, who was born 4 years later in 1982. She also had a brother named Curtis, who was 6 years younger. Reports state that Carithia and her sisters and brother were raised in a loving home, but when they were all children, tragedy struck the family hard. According to reports, in 1988, when Carithia was 10 years old, she saw her sister Nicole, who was 6, crossing the street after school, when Nicole was struck and killed by a car. 2 years later, when Carithia was 12, her older sister Margaret hung out with some friends one day. Reports state that later that night, Margaret and her friends met a group of men who were driving past them in some housing projects. When a 20-year-old man named Maurice Jones pointed a gun at the group of men, Margaret told him to stop, but instead of shooting the men, Maurice got angry and shot and killed 13-year-old Margaret. Maurice was later found guilty and sentenced to decades in prison. This series of tragedies took a toll on the family, and for years, Carithia was said to have had recurring nightmares regarding what happened to her sisters. However, reports state that things started to look up for her when she found out she was pregnant. Not much is publicly known regarding her pregnancy or the father of her child, but from all accounts, Carithia seemed to welcome the pregnancy and the upcoming baby with open arms. Carithia also had help preparing for the baby's arrival with her family and friends, with a lot of the support coming from two of her mother's oldest friends, sisters Felicia Scott and Angela Burton, who also had children of their own. As a matter of fact, Carolyn babysat for the sisters' children often, and Carithia did as well when she got older. The mother and daughter also spent time together leisurely with the sisters, and the ladies were said to have hung out regularly, which included January 31st, 1996. Reports state that on that day, Carithia, who was 9 months pregnant by this time, and Carolyn were picked up by Felicia to go shopping for baby clothes in the neighboring Utah, Alabama. After the trip, Felicia dropped Carithia and Carolyn off at their home and told them she would be back after taking her partner, Frederick Polian, to cash his check. After Felicia came back later, she took Carithia and Carolyn to Family Dollar to continue shopping for baby clothes. Then, they all went back to Felicia's apartment, where she shared with Fred and her two sons, and the group all ate some cake. The group relaxed for a while at Felicia's, and then, sometime that day, Felicia's sister Angela, her partner Anthony, and her five children came over as well. Reports state that when they did, Angela and Anthony had just gotten into an argument, and he refused to come inside and waited in the car. And when Angela came inside the home, she was very upset and did not speak to Carolyn or Carithia due to how unhappy she was with her and Anthony's argument. After things cooled down a little, though, Felicia discussed having pizza for dinner and said, quote-unquote, "Us two pregnant women are gonna eat pizza." Curiously, though, after she said this, Carolyn seemed a bit confused because Felicia seemed to allude that she was pregnant along with Carithia. But that was odd to her because she knew that Felicia had had a hysterectomy sometime before. But she didn't say anything about Felicia or what she said, and neither did Angela. Before they were set to get pizza, however, Felicia had picked up her son that afternoon from school. When she was done picking her son up from school, Felicia called Carithia and asked if she still wanted pizza, to which Carithia agreed, and at around 6 p.m., Felicia picked Carithia up to get pizza. The next day, in the early morning hours of February 1st, Carolyn noticed that Carithia was not home. She was obviously worried because not only was Carithia only 17, she was also due any day now. According to reports, Carolyn called Felicia's home around 2 a.m. to check on Carithia. Fred answered the phone and told her he didn't know where Carithia was. However, a few hours later, Felicia called and told Carolyn that she had dropped Carithia off at Carolyn's after their pizza dinner at around 8:30 p.m. Carolyn didn't believe her, though, and straight up asked Felicia what she had done with her daughter. Felicia didn't respond to her question at first, but shockingly, she told Carolyn she went to Birmingham and gave birth to her own baby. When asked why she was out of the hospital so soon after giving birth to said baby, Felicia said she had no insurance. Therefore, the hospital told her to leave. After she was told this, Carolyn wondered if Felicia had done something to Carithia, taken her baby, and tried to take the baby as her own. With this in mind, Carolyn called 911 and said she believed Felicia Scott and her partner, Frederick Polian, kidnapped her daughter, Carithia Curry. A detective was assigned to the case, but even though Carolyn named Felicia and Fred as possible suspects, they didn't have enough evidence to investigate them. However, a few days later, the detective heard from Carolyn again, saying she had heard from people around town that Felicia indeed had a baby at her home. When she heard this, she immediately thought the baby was Carithia's baby and alerted the detective. This time, the detective went to Felicia's apartment and saw the baby girl and questioned Felicia about whether the baby was hers or Carithia's and about her alleged childbirth. Reports state Felicia told the detective that the baby girl was hers and Fred's and told the detectives about the prenatal care she received from the local health department. She also explained that the reason she didn't have a birth certificate for the baby was because she was born on the side of a road, and just like she told Carolyn, she left the hospital quickly because she was told to leave due to not having any insurance. Skeptical about Felicia's explanation, the detective asked Felicia if she would sign a medical release that would allow police access to her medical records, and Felicia agreed. While they were accessing her records, the lead detective assigned a homicide detective to the case, as they felt now her case was bigger than a disappearance. The next day, reports state the lead detective got access to Felicia's medical records, and she found that Carolyn was right. Felicia had had a hysterectomy sometime before, meaning she did not give birth to the baby girl. When they went to question Felicia about this, they could not find Felicia. But they did track down her sister Angela in Birmingham on February 7th. According to reports, Angela told them she had not seen Felicia, Fred, or any of their children in a few days, but that Felicia, Fred, and the children visited her on the morning of February 1st, stayed the night, and left on the 2nd. Eventually, though, and it's unclear how, detectives learned that Felicia and her immediate family were in Norcross, Georgia. When they tracked her down on February 8th, as previously mentioned, they questioned her about the baby and alleged childbirth. After she gave the same explanation, investigators knew she was lying based on her medical records. And according to reports, Felicia Scott was arrested and charged with interference with custody. She was then transferred back to Alabama and released on $25,000 bail while she awaited trial. Meanwhile, the baby girl was taken to a hospital where she was determined to be in good health. Then the baby was taken into Alabama state custody until DNA tests could prove she was Carithia's and a custody hearing could be held. Reports state that the test proved the baby was Carithia's, and she was then given to her biological father, who named her Christina Cole. However, the baby was eventually given to Carithia's father, Curtis, who was named as her official caregiver. Meanwhile, the search for Carithia intensified as it was now confirmed her baby had been taken from her. But how and where was she? Well, reports state Felicia was obviously the main suspect, and after she consented to detectives searching her car, they found evidence that blood had been in the car and that someone had tried to clean it up. While still waiting for the trial, detectives went back to question Angela, and reports state she changed her statement and said that on February 1st, she didn't know where Felicia was, and neither did Fred because he called her and asked her where she was. Angela said that after Fred called, she called local hospitals to find Felicia. However, after the second interview, police determined Angela's phone records did not match her statement. Several days later, though, they noticed a few phone calls going to a certain number, and they traced it to Angela's ex-boyfriend, Curtis Turner. As detectives prepared to interview Curtis, they received a call from 911 dispatch on March 25th saying a man called and said that as he was hunting for aluminum cans, he had found a suspicious garbage can near a ravine that was covered in duct tape. When investigators arrived, they viewed the garbage can, which was 50 feet from the ravine, and when they looked inside, they saw a New Kids on the Block bedsheet at the top. As they laid the trash can down, they pulled the sheet, and they could tell something was wrapped inside. When they unwrapped the sheet, it wasn't something, it was someone in the trash can. And after the body was taken to the medical examiner's office, dental records confirmed that the body in the trash can was that of Carithia Curry. After Carithia's family was notified that her body had been found, Felicia Scott's charges were upgraded from interference to murder. And after she was arrested for first-degree murder, she was held without bail. Reports state she refused to speak with police, but after Fred was arrested for the same charge, he cooperated and told police more about what happened. According to reports, Fred led detectives to an area where he threw out more evidence of the murder, which was just a short distance from where Carithia's body was found. At the scene, detectives found a pamphlet about high-risk pregnancies with C-section diagrams, razor blades with covers, and rubber gloves, which police theorized Felicia studied because when Carithia was autopsied, it was determined that she had been cut open from her breastbone to pelvic bone with precision, meaning they believed Felicia performed a gruesome homemade C-section on her and took her baby. The autopsy also found that Carithia was shot in her head with a .25 caliber pistol, and that despite this, she was still alive as Felicia began cutting. Later, during the investigation, detectives learned Angela moved to her mother's home in Tuscaloosa. When they found her there, they asked why she had moved, and she said it was because she was downsizing and that she had moved most of her things to a storage unit. When detectives came across her unit, they obtained a search warrant to look for any evidence regarding Carithia's case, and reports state they found an incomplete set of New Kids on the Block bed sheets, which matched the sheet Carithia's body was found in. Unsure of what she would say about the sheets, detectives questioned friends and close neighbors of Angela, and they confirmed she did once own a full set of the same type of sheet, meaning to detectives they had a link between Carithia's case and Angela. Reports state that the next month, in April, they finally interviewed Angela's ex-boyfriend, Curtis, and he said that on February 1st, Angela called him around 10 p.m. that night and asked him to come over to her house. When he arrived, he said Angela had a baby at her home and said it was Felicia and Fred's. Although he said he was surprised because he knew Felicia couldn't have any more children, and that when he got there, he saw Felicia's car in the driveway, but not them, but he did hear voices in a back bedroom. Curtis went on to say that Angela said Fred asked her to help her hide a body, and that she saw Felicia digging a hole in her backyard earlier. Angela also told him that Felicia said someone tried to rape her, but she fought back and killed him. Angela said she thought she was joking and asked her to see the body. But Felicia wasn't joking and showed her the body of Carithia to her shock. Curtis told detectives that after hearing this, he told Angela to call the police. But she said she didn't want to get into trouble and lose her family. But she later agreed to call. Reports state that when Curtis called her the next morning to follow up, though, Angela said she couldn't talk because the police were pulling up her driveway. With this statement and the bedsheet evidence, police charged Angela Burton with hindering an investigation, and she too was arrested. Fast forwarding to December 1996, Felicia Scott and Frederick Polian were officially charged with capital murder and were facing the death penalty. A year later, in December 1997, Fred's trial began with his defense's opening statement being that Fred's involvement in Carithia's case began after she died, with them admitting that Fred helped Felicia hide and dispose of Carithia's body in the garbage can, but that he was unaware of what was wrapped in the sheet, until after it was found at the ravine. They argued that when he found out about Carithia's body being in the garbage can, he was worried and thought it was too late to go to the police, and he thought he would face charges if he did. They concluded by saying that they could contend that the hindering charge was legitimate, but that there was reasonable doubt about his involvement in the murder and kidnapping, and that Fred truly believed Carithia's baby was his and Felicia's. However, the prosecution argued that they thought Fred knew a body was inside the sheet and that people don't usually help hide bodies unless they were involved in the murder. By December 13th, the jury deliberated, and on the 15th, they acquitted Fred of the murder charge, but found him guilty of kidnapping. In January 1988, Fred was sentenced to 20 years in prison. Months later, in September 1998, Felicia's trial began. Her defense team's opening statement placed the blame on Fred, and that Felicia only helped him cover up the murder out of fear of Fred. Felicia also testified and said that on January 31st, 1996, she took Carithia to get pizza, then took her back to her home. She said they were both watching TV when Fred arrived and went into the kitchen, and that a while later, Carithia got up to get something from the kitchen, and Felicia said she heard a popping noise and went to check on Carithia. She continued and said that when she went into the kitchen, she saw Carithia lying on the floor in a pool of blood, and she thought she'd fallen and hit her head. She said she told Fred they needed to take Carithia to the hospital, but Fred said no and told her to go to the bathroom to calm herself down. She said she did, and then when she came out, she saw Fred with a butcher knife cutting Carithia open, trying to remove her baby. Felicia then said she went blank and had no recollection of what happened next until the next day when she saw a newborn baby in her car. Felicia continued her testimony and said Fred forced her to go to the local hospital and say the baby was hers so she could get a birth certificate for the baby. She also claimed Fred threatened her and that she was so scared she thought of killing herself. However, when Felicia was cross-examined and asked by the prosecution as to why she told multiple people she was pregnant, Felicia said it was a misunderstanding and that it was Fred's ex-girlfriend who was pregnant and that she was just excited to become a quote-unquote stepmom. So in her mind, she thought it was a good idea to tell people she was expecting a baby and that people were to draw their own conclusions about what she meant. However, many witnesses testified and disputed Felicia's testimony by saying Felicia kept claiming she was the one pregnant and even said it was a high-risk pregnancy. Eventually, Felicia's case was handed over to the jury, and on September 26, 1998, Felicia Scott was found guilty of capital murder, and she was later sentenced to life without parole. Her sister Angela Burton was also later convicted of hindering an investigation and sentenced to 17 years in prison in 1999. However, after several appeals, Angela was acquitted, citing insufficient evidence to sustain a conviction, and she was released. Frederick Polian served his sentence and has also since been released. Also, despite filing several appeals, Felicia Scott remains in prison and will more than likely die there. Lastly, Carithia's baby is now a full-grown woman in her 20s. The story of the abduction of Carithia Curry and her baby comes from the sources of the Montgomery Advisor, the New York Times, Case Law, and others I'll put in the notes. All right, so I know that I mentioned this is going to be a brutal, violent case. A lot of 90s crime time cases are full of violence, but this one was very violent to me because obviously a fetal abduction is very scary, and the fact that Carithia was still alive as she was being cut open by that monster Felicia is just horrendous. I think it's very stupid and very selfish that Felicia took this baby from someone Carithia thought was a friend. Angela, I know she pretty much lied the entire time, in my opinion. I know she was probably trying to save her sister. I think she may not have known everything that was happening, but she knew a lot with what was happening. She could have said something, in my opinion. Maybe she didn't know that, you know, Carithia was going to be kidnapped and murdered and her baby taken. But she saw her body, and she could have said something. Again, she was probably trying to save herself and her sister. But for me, when she heard, according to reports, that Felicia said, us pregnant women are going to eat pizza, maybe she should have said something, like alerted, like sound the alarm. I know you're not pregnant because you had a hysterectomy. Carolyn also heard the same thing. I'm not blaming anyone for that, but I can only imagine what they were thinking. Like, we know you, we've known you long enough to know that you've had a hysterectomy. You can't have a baby. What are you talking about? Us pregnant women are going to have pizza. I feel, speaking of Carolyn, I feel very terrible about Carolyn's situation because she lost all three of her daughters to some type of violence. Margaret, her oldest, was murdered by a fool who was actually just out on bond for another murder he committed. And he killed her and sentenced to life, pretty much decades in prison. But on the flip side of Margaret's sister's case, her killer, Maurice, was actually killed in prison in the late 90s. So there may have been some divine intervention. I don't know. That's like crazy to me. And also Carithia's younger sister, Nicole, I believe that car accident was an accident, but it was still violent. And then now Carithia was murdered in that sinister way and her baby was taken. I guess the silver lining is that Carolyn has a grandchild. I'm not sure why she wasn't named. Or Carithia's partner or father of the baby was not named as the primary caregiver. It was Carithia's father. I don't know why, but, you know, from what I can tell, Carithia's baby was raised in a very loving environment despite the circumstances as to how she came into this world. I think that Felicia is where she needs to be. I don't think she has any remorse. I think her testimony was kind of stupid. It makes no sense. I do blame someone, Fred, as well. I don't think he was innocent. Obviously, the courts found him guilty. But I don't think he had that idea of killing Carithia for the baby. I think he went along with what Felicia said because she wanted the baby. I don't know how he thought. I don't know if he knew that she had a hysterectomy. Because I won't hold him on that. I don't know if he knew that. I don't know how long they were together. But Felicia had a hysterectomy. That was not her baby. She killed Carithia, her quote-unquote friend, for her baby. I don't even know, like, why she wanted a baby that bad. I mean, I know a lot of women want babies, but she already had two. And, you know, she had a hysterectomy. I don't know why she had a hysterectomy if she wanted another baby. I just so many questions. It's all so sad, and I think Felicia is where she needs to be. Because also, last thing, I don't think she has any remorse, because I saw a recent mugshot of her and she's just smiling away. Like, she has no remorse. She doesn't care. Maybe she's just at peace of where she's going to be for the rest of her life, which is in prison, which I think is where she needs to be. And I do think Fred has served enough time, because I don't think he killed Carithia. I just think he helped dispose of her body and knew more than what he said. But again, he may have actually thought that that baby, that Felicia was pregnant. I apologize. I had a brain fart. That Felicia was pregnant, but it just all came crashing down fast. He was caught up and he got sentenced 20 years for that. And yeah, I think he served his time, and I think he learned a valuable lesson after all that. And as well as Angela, sorry, that's not my last quote, but Angela, maybe she should have served some more time. I can't, you know, fight with the courts, of course, but, you know, I do think she had more knowledge of what was going on. Maybe she should have served more, but she got out on a pill. And yeah, that's it. Thank you for tuning in to this brand new episode of 90s Crime Time, and I hope you found it interesting. If you like what you've heard and haven't done so, please leave a rating and a review for 90s Crime Time if you'd like. There's also some upcoming things for 90s Crime Time coming up soon, so please take a listen to the upcoming episodes for the rest of the season, and I will try my best to be on time for next week because I have some specials going on, special episodes going on. And stay safe and healthy, and I will see you soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.